This is the Fabric Podcast, and we've been talking about stirrings. Maybe you can relate to that sometimes gut-wrenching wondering if you're spending your days on what you really want your life to be about. Deep rumblings like that are what Greg Meyer challenges us to look at directly as we wrap up this conversation series for now. Here he is.
So welcome, everybody. Welcome to Field. Those of you on live stream, welcome. The people listening to the podcast, we're glad that you are with us in whatever ways you are. Greg Meyer, it's great to be with you today. And Tim, thank you for co-creating with us here today. I always love working with you and doing what you're doing with us. So, yeah. So this is our third and actually our final week talking about stirrings. All right, and stirrings, you know, there are all these things that you'll see. Last week, the community put together this word cloud of all the different words that they know these stirrings by. And as you can see, it came up with an awful lot of stuff there, which means to me that, like, stirrings is not an unfamiliar thing. Like, we all know what we're talking about. Like, we all have these about all different aspects of our lives. And, you know, whether it's your gut feelings, it's intuitions, these nudges, these rumblings, instincts, whispers, convictions, premonitions. I mean, we know those are there. And one thing that all of these stirrings have in common is that they're only a hunch or less. I mean, it's really modest. You can't make too many claims. And actually, I would even say saying that these stirrings are uncertain would probably be a little generous. Because, I mean, you know, how could they be anything but uncertain? I mean, the fact that you have a stirring about something means it doesn't exist yet, right? You aren't doing it yet. So it's got to compete against what you already know, what does exist, what does have evidence. So it's pointing at something that is, well, maybe it could be out there for you. So how can these stirrings ever compete with what we're doing? Yeah, they're always going to be on that other side of what we know. They're going to be about the new, and kind of like I've been saying, you know, what is already is, and so it's there, and what's new is new and unproven. So that's how that works, and that's important for us to, I think, wrap our heads around. Today, what I'm interested in us taking a peek at is, as it says on the title here, is the stirrings in our careers. Now, I use the word careers, but not really about careers, but I'm talking about the effort that you exert into the world. It's your energy, where you spend your time. It's the contribution that you make to the world. Actually, the phrase I really like to use is it's your work in the world. It might have something to do with your career, and it might not have something to do with your career. You certainly don't have to have a paid job to have these stirrings. You don't have to have a career to have work in the world, and you probably don't just have one. But whether we are conscious of it or not, we all have impact in the world. I think it's good for us to sit back and reflect on it and to maybe listen to what our stirrings have to do with us. So my question I have for us all is, do you have stirrings about your work in the world? Or maybe what your work in the world could be, should be. And when you have those stirrings about your work in the world, what feelings go along with it? Are you excited? Are you proud? Are you a little nervous? Are you anxious? Are you confused? Are you depressed? What feelings go along with that? Probably it's a mix of things. Now, before I ask you to dig into your own work in the world and your own stirrings, let's, you know, take the focus off us and look at somebody else. In fact, let's take the focus off individuals and look at corporations. Let's kind of get our bearings on this issue. And has anyone heard of a company called Facebook? Okay, I kind of had a funny feeling that maybe some of you had run into that. You're probably aware of the scandal that they're embroiled in now ever since Frances Haugen kind of was the whistleblower and unveiled all these internal documents and stuff to the media and exposed how Facebook's own stirrings, their own research showed that they were having harmful effect on people and actually promoting, conspiracy theories and, you know, just unhelpful societal stuff in order to keep people on Facebook and to be using their platform more and more and more. And as Haugen put it, they decided to ignore stirrings and go for profit over people. Anyway, it sounds like a stirring story for me. So, the question is what we're doing. Anyway, the daily podcast, I don't know if you listen to it, I listen to it pretty regularly, took on this issue a couple of weeks ago. And I just want to jump into it midstream. Shira Frankel and Asted Herndon are discussing a little piece of what the government might be requiring Facebook to do. So let's just jump into this conversation.
I think instead what they do is say, you yourself have said that you don't want to promote certain things. Facebook has been really public by saying, we don't want as a company to promote COVID misinformation. Now, we as the government are going to hold you accountable and responsible if you continue to promote COVID misinformation. If you suggest to people to follow accounts that are known promoters of COVID misinformation or amplify and recommend COVID misinformation groups and pages, we're going to hold you responsible for that. That is your recommendation algorithm pushing people towards something that you know they shouldn't be pushed towards.
And how was that prospect received at Facebook?
Well, if you're a Facebook engineer, and I spoke to one Facebook engineer late last night who was like, yes, please, you know, this is what I want. This is what I've been asking my managers for. Let's do what we say we're going to do and let them hold us accountable. I think there are actually a lot of people inside Facebook that are hoping that's what happens. I think if you're a Facebook executive and you're thinking about the bottom line and you're thinking about competing against China and TikTok and all these other companies out there, this is awful, right? This is going to slow down your business. This is going to force you to think about something really in the weeds and mundane instead of your huge growth aspirations that you've been able to focus on until now.
This is going to slow down your business. Listening to these stirrings is going to slow down your business. It's going to interrupt what you have known to do and how you have known to do it. It's going to interrupt your decisions and your definition of success and the rewards that you decided were the ones that were worth chasing. True for Facebook? Yeah, I think the shoe can go on our feet as well. So just to back up a little bit from that conversation, remember a couple of things about stirrings that we talked about, particularly in the first week in our conversation, that I think are important for us to keep in mind here. And the first is this, and these are on your outline, by the way, in the back of your Sunday paper, there's an outline. You can find it online, too, if you're on the podcast or on the live stream. You can find it there. So the first is to realize that not all stirrings are good, all right? I mean, they don't necessarily have to follow all of them. Lots of ideas creep into our heads and into our hearts. They come from all sorts of places. They come from, you know, that voice, that 24-hour-a-day narration that comes from our hurts and our habits and our hang-ups. And they speak to us, and they call us, they do all sorts of stuff. Not all stirrings should be followed. But I would say, while not all stirrings should be followed, I do believe they should all be listened to. Because whether we're supposed to follow them or not, they got important information. They're telling us something, at least about ourselves, if not about something else, that we need to be thinking about and we need to be keeping into consideration. Now, for Facebook, clearly it means that they don't have to follow the stirrings, right? They don't have to follow the information that they're getting from all these different sort of places. It works different for a corporation than it does for us as individuals. They don't have to go where all these stirrings lead, but the question is, are they going to listen to it? And if they do decide to listen to it, how will they decide whether to or whether not to follow where the stirrings are leading? So that's one thing. Not all stirrings are good, okay? It's important for us to remember that. But the second piece of this, the second characteristic that I want us to remember is that conventional thinking is virtually always the enemy of our stirrings. Conventional thinking is virtually always the enemy of our stirrings. That's certainty at work here. You know, and who, let's take the Facebook example here, the executives at Facebook, they are the ones with the most at stake holding on to the way we have done business, the way we've learned to do it, what we've been chasing, all right? You know, the conventional thinking, status quo, equilibrium that we've established, the direction that we have. While Facebook may be always moving and molding to adapt to the new situation, the thing they don't change, right? And that is like, well, this is by getting people in here. Conventional thing is by getting people on our platform and keeping them here, the longer we keep them, the more money we make, all right? That's the thing that the stirrings is making them question and to think about. So, you know, are they going to do it? But that's only thinking that stirrings are there to upset conventional thinking. What if that's only one role? What if the other role is that they are there to show us a possible new that we don't know yet? I mean, so one is it got to push the old away, but then also introduce the new. And what does it take us, what does it take for us to let go of the known in order to maybe reach for that unknown which we have to admit is uncertain, unproven, untried, only possible. Let's listen again to their conversation.
But couldn't making the platform less toxic be a good business decision? How do we know that changes to the algorithm, looking at this research to minimize harm, isn't a good long-term strategy? That people will spend more time on the platform that they find less toxic?
Well, that's the argument that Haugen is making, that Facebook can make decisions to make itself a healthier platform and that in the long run, it'll actually improve their business. But the truth is we don't know because no one's tried it yet. They've decided that they really want short-term gain. They really want more users. And so they've made decisions to amplify hate speech and misinformation because it gets people coming back over and over again. And I think it's a great question, right? Like, what happens if they were to decide the opposite? Would they end up with people coming back fewer times a day, but actually staying lifelong customers and wanting to encourage their children when they're old enough to join a place like Instagram or Facebook?
Hmm. Okay, so now I don't use this example from The Daily to beat up on Facebook, especially since if you're on our live stream right now, you're live streaming through Facebook, okay? But I do have to say that if this is a big issue for Facebook and if they can't find any resolution to this, we might have to consider our own use of that platform. But it's not about Facebook, right? I mean, this is not about Facebook. This is about you. This is about me. I mean, how do we have parallel things going on in our lives? We all have the paths that we maybe are considering for the future, or maybe they're just sort of new, or maybe we've been in a long time and they're well-worn already, that we have stirrings about for all kinds of reasons. And how willing are we to listen to them, to let go, to try something, to take a risk? I mean, we need those paths that we have to align with a bunch of things. And this Facebook has that same situation. We have them, for instance, they have to align with our needs, right? I mean, needs for income and getting your insurance, your benefits, security, and maybe to match experience that you already have or your geographic location, okay? I mean, you have needs on how you are going to do your work in the world. You also have the world's needs. It isn't just what you have to offer. It's what does the world need from you, all right? What's actually valuable and useful to the rest of the people around you, to the rest of the world around you? And then there's your values, right? This is the integrity issue. I mean, you cannot talk about stirrings in your career, in your work in the world, without getting deep into the integrity question over and over again from every direction. So, I mean, what that says is that being good at something isn't enough to make that be a justification for your work in the world. I mean, it needs to match your values. And then there's a whole issue of change. You may have settled the stirrings and found your work in the world and are happy with it, and then time goes by and it just doesn't seem to match anymore. I mean, Fabric was started as a community 15 years ago because it seemed to really match something that was needed, and a lot of people took a big risk to make it happen, and it had to evolve. I mean, Fabric is a lot different than it was when we started. We've had to continue to change, and we are continuing to have to do that. And then there's your interests and passions, right? What can you sustain, all right? What can you sustain for a lifetime? I mean, I can do almost anything for a day, for a week, for a month, maybe for a year or so, but for decades? I mean, somehow I need that to be answered for me as well. From Acid Herndon's and Shira Frankel's perspective, there are stirrings of a new success that Facebook could experience if they would be willing to listen and follow them. And they do a great job at selling the shiny, possible, look at what it could be like. But they have to admit, but we don't know if that's possible. No one has ever taken that business model and tried it out and see if it works. Should Facebook take that risk? Would you take that risk? Or more realistic, do you take that risk? Okay, so what I want to do is I want to take a few minutes for us to actually figure this out for ourselves, okay? You'll find on your outline And you can do this if you're on the live stream or whatever, or if you're on the podcast, just hit pause and do this for a little bit. I want you to think about these couple of questions. They're up there. So you find that little box there. First of all, there's your work in the world, right? What is your work in the world? Take some time doing it. If you're a younger person, there may be things that you're thinking about and going into, but remember, this isn't just your career. This isn't just your job. In fact, your job may not even show up on there. Who knows? What is your work in the world? And, you know, break it up. Think about it. Put some points in there. And then also, the next thing is, what are your stirrings about that work in the world? Add some words to that as well. When I think about that, I think, what are my thoughts related to it? What, you know, when I think about my different parts of my work in the world, I have some ideas that pop up right now. I also have emotional reaction. I feel good about, bad about, you know, all that kind of stuff. Then I also sometimes note that I have a physical feeling, a physical reaction. Write those things down. Okay, so take a couple of minutes and do this. And I'm going to warn you, all right, ahead of time, I'm going to have you talk to someone else about this. But how much you share, what you share is completely up to you, so don't worry, all right? But I figured I better give you a warning. So go for it. As you're winding up, these are important questions, and if you're in a Fabric group, these are the kind of conversations that you get to have there with people that you've got currency with, that kind of know what's going on and know the struggles behind these sorts of things. And if you would take a question like this to your groups and think about it, I would love to hear back like what you come up with. That feedback loop to me as someone who speaks to the community is incredibly helpful and important. So send me some of those thoughts and ideas that come up. So my guess is, and it's really not a guess because I know you're human beings, most of you, and so I know this is probably true of you, but you have stirrings about your work in the world. And from my experience, the more attention I pay to my stirrings, the more stirrings I get. It's kind of like, you know, opening the tap wider and wider and wider, and sometimes you wish you hadn't done it because you find that you have to start actually doing some stuff. I want to just think a little bit about some of the things that make us hesitant to listen to our stirrings, and some rightly so, and some maybe not so rightly so, and then some things that make it more likely that we are going to listen to those stirrings. And just base this on your outlines and some stuff. One of the things I think that makes us hesitant, or maybe we even should be hesitant to our stirrings, is what I call greener pasture thinking. That is, you know, the saying that everything is greener on the other side of the fence. The pasture is always greener on the other side of the fence. And sometimes we know this. Oh, well, you know, new idea that's out there. I should really be suspicious of that. It's probably not any better when I have, right? You know, so we discount that possible future. Another one that's, you know, kind of similar to that is that I'm in a bad situation at the moment, you know, and so I really should maybe be not, you know, letting my mind go, right? I'm just so down on what I'm doing now that's actually what I have to work on, what I'm doing now. It's not about, oh, I could change careers or everything. It's just that I'm in a bad moment right now. Another variation on that is the real and the ideal thing, something we talk about here quite often, actually, is that, you know, one of the problems is that the existing is real, and you know all the ins and outs of it, and, you know, what isn't there is easy to idealize, and, you know, pretty similar to greener pasture type thinking. And I think we have to be a little bit careful about that. An example of that, though, is I don't know how many people I have had conversations with as a pastor over the years who said, I went into this field because I loved studying it so much in college, and the practice of it is not like studying it. Yeah. And then the little twist on that is that sometimes we think we're in the wrong thing because what we're doing feels too much like work. Yeah, there's a reason why work is called work. You know, it has a work element to it. You don't love all of it all the time. But, you know, there's a balance in that, too. Kind of on the other side of it, and things they really kind of look out for is, There's these things called golden handcuffs. Do you know about golden handcuffs? That's when you've got a job. This usually is a job, the career side, that it compensates you. It pays you so well. It could be not money. It might be fame, fortune. You know, you just like get all the recognition, prestige from it. So well that you don't want to give up on it, even though it's actually making you miserable. Or you know it's just so contrary to what you really want to be about. I wish I had such a problem. So that's one. In a couple more weeks, one of our guests during our reimagining focus, which starts next week, is Dipankar Mujeri, who is the artistic creator for the artistic director for the Pangaea World Theater. Just an amazing guy. I've loved talking to him. But when I was talking to him last time, he was telling me like how he started his theater. And do you know that this guy, he was the resident director for the Guthrie. I mean, which is kind of what everybody's like, you go to Guthrie and your next stop is New York. And he had this job. And he one day just got up and said, I'm resigning, because he couldn't do what he really wanted to do, which I think he probably will talk about when he comes here to visit with us. And he said, I'm going to start my own theater with absolutely nothing. He had nothing. In fact, he didn't realize until he went home and talked to his wife that the only reason he was able to stay in the United States is that his visa was through the Guthrie. And he was going to be undocumented the next day. I mean, oh well, details, right? He uncuffed those golden handcuffs. Another thing is competence. You may really be good at what you do, and you spent a long time getting there, and you cannot imagine starting over, because anything else you're going to do, you're going to be the newbie at. You will have to give up all your competence and re-earn it. And do you really want to do that, especially this far into your career? He says, autobiographically. That can be a real question for us. Okay, so those are some things, you know, that make us hesitant to listen to and follow our stirrings. What are some things that could make us more likely to listen to and follow our stirrings? You can name these. Things like meaning, fulfillment, integrity. How about health? It would be better for you, better for the world. Or maybe moral choice. Like, do I really dare continue doing this? There's something like fundamentally wrong here, I've discovered. Or enjoyment. Yeah, work, maybe work, but also I think there can be, should be some enjoyment there. I think those are things that we all know something about. The truth is, we pay a price when we spend our lives on things that don't sink into those things. And when we begin to pay that price of finding our work in the world that doesn't have meaning, fulfillment, doesn't match, you know, integrity, moral choice, enjoyment, sort of things, we can expect to start hearing more and more stirrings because of the internal conflict, the cognitive dissonance that is going on inside of us is going to start echoing, and you are going to start hearing it. A great example, I mean, the Bible, if you start reading the Bible from this perspective of stirrings, it just really opens a lot of things up. A couple weeks ago, we read a little bit from the prophet Isaiah, who was reacting at a really transitional, stirring time of Israel's history, 2,500 years before us right now, before the time of Jesus too. And he was taking the voice of God, speaking for Yahweh, the I am who I am, that, you know, fabric of the universe, letting people kind of know where things are. And he was telling them that, you know, don't keep doing what you've always been doing because it's not working anymore. In fact, God saying, I'm already doing new things. They're springing up like all around you. And then he like asks this question to them and to us, can't you see it happening already? I mean, seriously, you can't see it? And then he takes it to another point. He says, it's not just, he doesn't just show the carrot luring us on to what could be, but he gives us that warning of what happens when we don't listen. There's that stick behind it as well. Listen to these words from Isaiah. They're on your outline on the screen. He writes, who sees many things but doesn't notice them? Who has open ears but hears nothing? These people, they are robbed and looted. They're lost in holes, locked in prisons. Who among you is heeding this? Who will pay attention and listen for the time to come? From Isaiah's perspective, what he's trying to help us see, and I think this is something we get mixed up so often because I completely agree with it, we are not punished for not listening. If you want to think about, you know, for God speaking to us, calling us, whatever it might be, however you understand these stirrings, we are not punished for not listening and not acting on it. We are simply suffering the consequences as living as if the past was still present and it isn't. And as we try to go into the future, into the world, that the time that is to come with what was old, we will start suffering the experience, the consequences of that. Things will fall apart. We need to be about creating what is new. His description is so vivid. Clinging to what was instead of moving with what will be is like being robbed and looted. You think you've got this all going, but it's all just going to disappear from your grasp. He says, it's if you're lost in holes or locked in prisons. Isaiah is saying that the crazy person is not the one who takes adventure to go do the new thing, but the one who tries to hang on and keep the old thing working and working and working, even though the world has moved on. But that's hard. And how do you know which messages echo the future and not your baggage? I mean, because you have to do it in real time, in a real life, in a real messy, ethereal way, just like I do. And there is no formula, but there are a couple basic human orientations, I think, that we can remember. And I want to just take a couple of minutes finishing up talking about what some of those are. Some of those things that we can maybe hang on to as we try to evaluate those stirrings within us. And the first is this. You are a human being, not a human doing, all right? I said it before, other people have said it before, and I'll say it again, because as obvious as it is, it's one of the things that we all need to be woken up to over and over again. Now, who you are is much more important than what you do. But what you do is not unimportant. In fact, it's incredibly important. What's important is the relationship between the two, right? And it starts with who you are, and what you do proceeds from who you are. There should be a relationship with them. What you are doing should be expressing who you are in some fundamental place. My own career, I think my early years in hard sciences and math, and then going on to sociology, anthropology, gradually slipping off that slippery slope into theology and religion and starting churches and stuff like that. That was not me missing what I was being asked to do. It was just my process of doing that. So this is all about integrity, right? The Bible calls it righteousness. If you hear that word, right? Righteousness is just like an old-fashioned word that literally means alignment, is how you are aligned, all right, with what's your doings, with your beings. Okay, that's one. The second is this. You don't have work, you have a vocation. You don't have work, you have a vocation, which is just means a calling. You have a calling, which is a weird world, a weird word. A lot of people think calling only belongs to like Mother Teresa types. No. A calling is for anybody and everybody. We all have callings. And they have a lot to do, they have a lot more to do than just with our jobs, with our careers. And vocations arrive as a stirring. We need to listen for them. We need to wrestle with it. And very seldom does your calling come as specific as a job. Like, oh, I am going to do this. I'm going to have that job. I mean, it happens, but usually it's only because that is such a clear representation of where they feel themselves being drawn. And it often isn't just one thing. It evolves, kind of like mine did, hired sciences into social sciences into this stuff that we talk about and devote our lives to now. Michael Kleber Diggs, who's going to be here in 2 weeks and wrote this book that we mentioned a minute ago, Worldly Things. He is a lawyer, was trained as a lawyer, loved law school, law was okay. He finally realized, kind of like I talked about later, he could not do this for his lifetime. See, he knew something else was stirring. He didn't know what it was. And as we talked, he's probably sure about this when he comes as well. But he was pretty well convinced that he could be doing a number of other things. And his process of figuring out which one he would devote himself to, and it ended up being writing and poetry, at least at this point in his life, was a really interesting process. And it was a choice, a way of listening to the calling and beginning to respond to it. I think that's how it works. So you don't just have work, you have a vocation, a calling. Give yourself credit for that. You do. And it doesn't have to be in these grand areas of life either. Okay, the third was this. It isn't what you do, it's what you do with what you do. I just kind of like that. I thought just making you write those three words three times was ridiculous enough to make you remember it. I could have shortened and said, it isn't what you do, it's how you do it, but that's not nearly as much fun. So it's not what you do, it's what you do with what you do, all right? And that is really important. I mean, we know it, right? But do we remember it? Do we remember that? We get all hung up and on what we see as the inherent social value of our job to justify our work in the world, right? And if we don't have one of those socially, you know, obviously good jobs, we maybe poo-poo it on when conversations around values. No. You don't need to do that. The world needs lots of different things done. They're all important. Well, a lot of them are important. All right, there are those questions around moral choice and things like that, yes, but there are a lot of things that go around it. This, too, is a really good conversation to have with your groups. But just let me say that there is more, again, than what your job is. It's what you do with that job. Like, what else do you accomplish? Don't confuse the widget that you're selling for what you are doing with your work in the world. I mean, it might be your relationships with the people that you work with and with your customers. I mean, it can be all sorts of things around that. It's, you know, your relationships and how you maintain them and so on. Your job, your career might merely be a platform for your work in the world. That may not be your work in the world, and that's okay. It works that way. You know, it isn't just that you are a dad or that you're a sibling or that you're a neighbor or a friend, but what kind of dad, right? What kind of sibling? What kind of neighbor? What kind of friend are you? That's where that question goes. Hold on to that as you wrestle with those. The last thing I want to mention is this mantra we've had through this whole series, and I really do think it's essential for us to hang on to as we listen deep, deep down to what's inside of us and we wonder whether we can trust it or not. And that is simply this thing that I've been saying every week. If you dare to look deep, deep inside yourself, what you will discover is lovely and it is precious, not a monster. I think if we don't learn to know and trust that self that is deep, deep inside of us, I don't know how we ever will find a way to those places that we're being called, those things that are being stirred within us. That is who you are. That is reflecting the place where you are woven the most deeply to all that is, to one another and to that which we call God. And that is where you are connected with the love of God that sees you as who you are and what you can be. When you dare to look deep inside, what you discover is lovely and it's precious. You do not see something that is unworthy or undeserving. You do not discover someone who's lucky to be loved or to love other people. You discover something wonderful. So I want to leave you with that. This week, your homework is to just carry on what you're doing with that table there, right? Continue to think and discover as you go, oh, this is my work in the world too. I hadn't thought about that. Or this is something I feel. These are my stirrings around that work in the world. Keep working on that. Share that with the people that you trust around you and invite you to do that.
Thanks for listening. We hope this conversation continues in your life. You can find other Fabric folks through our social media accounts at FabricMPLS, or find resources for discussions with smaller groups, family, and friends on our website. We also have live gatherings in the Twin Cities we'd love for you to be part of. Learn more at fabricmpls.com.